Blog Talk Radio.
Has it been since we've been on the air? About 2 weeks, I think, we did our last Fasten's anniversary of his death, but is he really dead? Where we talked about a few things, gave some words of advice. I noticed our friend Bella over there in Kenya is getting down with that episode. She, I think I sent her a link or she checked it out. She's been circulating among the Kenyans over there. Much love, Habari. So all my Kenyan people out there. Bella, what's going on? Hope you're doing well, doing smooth. People, it's been a long time. Hope all's going well. Things I cannot complain on this side when you wake up early in the morning and you can see the sun. God is good. Life is good. The ancestors are good. When you wake up and you can do what you can do and you really have your dreams. And like I always say, everything you do to make your dreams real is one step closer to making that dream real. Does that make sense to you? So, you know, I was checking out a young brother last night. I cannot remember his name, but he was from back home, left DRC at 3, went over to France. Can't remember the brother's name. I'll post it up. I'll check it out later on today. But it's not about him. It's not about, you know, what's going on with me. Well, actually, yeah, because, you know, my arm's still hurting. And I know I got a lot of your emails, a lot of your texts on Facebook and stuff like that. And people, I really appreciate your concern for my health. Yes, we have surgery coming up soon. Hopefully my mother doesn't hear this episode or my dad doesn't hear this because, you know, they'll come out here. My aunts with Pantene, but everything's well otherwise. Filming's going well. Once upon a time in the Congo, we have the young lady to play Geneva has been cast. We found the guy to play Hatari. He has been cast. He's actually ironically Rwandan, so it's very interesting how he came on board, which is very good. Speaks Kenyan, Rwandan, Swahili, Lingala, French. My French isn't that good, but that's going on well. People, thank you for your patience. I know you guys keep asking when's it going to come out. It has to be done righteous. The story, Once Upon a Time, the Congo is not about me. It's about the Congo, and we have to say the story correctly. We just can't throw it out there, and we have to be very careful because there's a lot of these film images and media products coming out that's just dogging my country, showing what the problem is but not showing the whole problem. Because let me tell you something, people. What you hear about Congo when they talk about, oh, all this corruption. Mobutu was corrupt. But let me tell you, you didn't see what was going on in the East when Mobutu was the president. It's not about, oh, he loves Mobutu. Oh, he loves Lumumba. No, what I'm saying is that there's a line in Gladiator where Maximus is about to go to the arena. And he's walking up there. He's twirling his sword. He's really anxious. He's really upset and annoyed. And Proximo, who's in charge of all the gladiators, said, Maximus, what's the problem? Maximus says, Marcus Aurelius had a vision of Rome. This is not it. This is not it. This is what I'm telling all you people out there, especially all you folks that are riding with real Congolese who are about the culture and the real allies of the Congo who's about the culture. The way Congo is right now, that's not the image of Congo that Lumumba, Mulele, Mulokwe, all the people, Mukaya, Lilinga, all our elders, all the ones that were there at 1960, all our relatives and elders that were there at the Conference du National in 81, 82, 91, like that. This is not the DRC that they envisioned. This isn't the DRC that I remember growing up, and this isn't the DRC that many of our elders and people from my generation grew up. So let me tell you something straight up. Let's just get this out the way. Congo's going to be back the way it was, and it's going to be better than the way it was. That's all it comes down to. That's why so many people don't want to be strong. They don't want to be the China of Central Africa. So now, let's get down to some business here. People, we have tried to make this interview for so long. I'm like pounding my hands here for so long. She was filming this movie. She was filming that movie. She was doing this movie. And every time her agent was like, oh, she's busy. Oh, she's not available. And I'm like, you got to be kidding. So we had to make this appointment. We had to make that appointment. She's the director of, people give it up, Nappy Head. She's the director of I Love You. She's the director of Missing. She's the director of Letter to Abu. Hey, Sadiq Abu's in our movie. One of them, that's the Sierra Leone we've been talking about. We're going to talk to two people. Drum roll, please. Sabrina Moella, writer, independent filmmaker, living up there in T-Dot. Let me give you a little information about Sabrina here. T-Dot via France, by way of Congo. We're going to go right to her bio here online. Sabrina Moella is an independent writer and filmmaker based in Toronto, born in France from Congolese parents. Malukai to her parents out there in France. I don't know how you say hello in Songhai. Songhai, I think her mom's Songhai, right? And her dad's Baluba. So, again, a Malukai to her parents over there in France. Bonjour, comment, about as deep as I want to go. She grew up in Paris and started writing as soon as she was old enough to hold a pen. Yeah, she's a writer. She was probably writing in the womb. After an undergraduate in media studies and another one in African studies, she started working as a journalist and TV writer in Paris. She received her first screenwriting nod for the short film, quote, Letter to Abu, end quote, that was presented at the Cannes Film Festival as part of the 10 Shorts Against Racism film series. After earning her master's degree in marketing and communications from La Sorbonne University, and my dad went to Sorbonne, she decided to move to Canada to pursue a career in filmmaking. She should have came to L.A., but anyway. Her work focuses on studying and narrating the everyday life, traditions, and culture of the Afro-Caribbean diaspora. Her films have screened at many festivals across Canada and the U.S. and have aired on prestigious programs such as BETJ's Black Story and the Badami syndicated series called African American Short Films. Sabrina has a passion for hair. She really does, people. Sabrina has a passion for hair, dance, and old still photography, three themes that are omnipresent in her films. When not busy shooting a new project or writing poetry, she could be seen rehearsing new Sukis dance steps in her living room or braiding her girlfriend's hair down in downtown Toronto, or T-Dot for those that are in though. She is currently writing her first feature-length screenplay, temporary entitled Little Things. Let's see if we can get her on the phone here because, you know, sometimes you got to call these people. And this was gonna happen, people, I bet you. We're going to call her. Phone's going to ring. And I bet you her agent's going to ask the phone and say, well, she can't come to the phone right now, so she's busy. So let's see if we can get on the line here. Let's see here. And we got about 90, we have about 90 text messages coming in for her already. My God. Let's see here if we can get on the phone. Bear with me, people. Wish I had the elevator music, though. We don't have that kind of stuff in the budget here, you know, in a recession. Let's see if we can get on the phone here.
Hello?
Well, good morning, Miss Sabrina. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. Thank you.
That's good. That's good. We have you live on air, so about 20,000 people are listening to you right now.
Oh, my God. 20,000 people? Ooh, I'm feeling shy all of a sudden. Yes. I thought it would be like
an intimate conversation. I know, but the problem is that with so many people, you know, I wanted the conversation to be between you and I, intimate, private, okay. We can talk about what we talk about, but the problem is that so many people want to hear your conversation, they want to know about your poem, they want to know so much about you, I felt that I had to acquiesce to their wishes and let them come on board, so please forgive me.
Okay.
<today.
laughs> That's okay.
So what's going
That's
on,
okay.
my friend? What's going on? How are you? What's going on up there?
I'm really good. I'm in Toronto right now, so it's summertime in the T-Dot, so everything is really, really good, doing well. I'm working on new project, my poetry, my new fields, and so on and so forth. So, yeah, I'm really okay right now.
All right. So I can hear the energy in your voice. Like I spoke to you last time, you have all that creative juices flowing. So we have to ask. A lot of people want to know. We're going to come to that poem. You know what poem I'm talking about in a second, but how did you get into film, into media? What was the origin of this whole desire to do filmmaking and things like that?
Oh my God, it's been all my life basically. I was born in France, grew up in France, even though I'm from Congo. And I think from an early age, I can't even remember how it got started. But I remember when I was a child, I was very quiet, very shy. And back in the day in France, like in the little city where I grew up, there were not really any people of color, so I was always like the only black person in my classroom and stuff. So I didn't have a lot of friends. There were a lot of racism, so I started creating my own world, my own reality, and that's how I got into writing and creating, because I was always playing by myself, having imaginary friends and stuff like that. So that's how it got, that's how it got started. And my parents are great storytellers. My parents, my uncles, even though I think they don't even realize it, they're really great storytellers, and they entertained us a lot when I was a child. Like my house was always full of uncles visiting, aunties, cousins, stuff like this and that. And my uncles, if you put all of them in a room, you give them one beer or two. And they're all set. They have crazy stories. Like every time I hear like those Hollywood people saying, well, we don't have any more stories to tell, it's always the same stories, blah, 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 I'm like, oh, so just put my uncles in a room and you'll have like plenty of stories. So I guess that's it. Part of it was my own reality when I was a child, like playing by myself. But and a big part of it is just my family heritage, like great storytellers. I know my grandma was just a good storyteller too. So that's how it all got started. And then I started writing poetry when I was a child, and my teachers was like, oh, she's really good. And they talked to my parents, and they were like, oh, you should encourage her, because we think that she has something. And then I started doing some contests and stuff, like writing even more. And then I started working for some newspapers when I was a teenager. And then, from that, it all started, writing, and I never turned back. Never turned back.
Nice. Who was your inspiration? Like when you decided to do film, was there a filmmaker, director, or we already have you were writing? I think you were writing in the womb since, you know, before you were even born. Was there a director you looked at and said, you know, that person's image, you know, is the kind of visuals I like? Was there a director or directors? Or producers, whatever that influenced you when you were growing up in terms of film?
Oh, yeah, so many. There's too many of them. Too many of them. Like, I think because I grew up in France, I really have this French influence, like all the new wave stuff. I like, sometimes I don't like to say that because I feel like all filmmakers, every filmmaker is like, oh, yeah, I've been influenced by the French new wave.
Right.
But, like, if when you look at my film, it's like I was trying to avoid taking this road, but when I look honestly at my film, I can see that no, there's nothing I can do. Like I really, the aesthetic of the French New Wave. So I was really influenced by François Truffaut, of course, Julien Jeans, and Quatre Cents Coups, or 400 Blows, I guess in English. Renoir, I love Renoir. That was before the French New Wave, but The Rules of the Game and all this aesthetic. That was really what I was looking at when I was a child. Yeah, that's weird, eh? But I love all these old school kind of movie. So I guess, yeah, the French New Wave. Charlie Chaplin is one of my favorite filmmakers. So,
wow.
Again, that aesthetic. Yeah, I used to really watch and rewatch all his films when I was a child. So that's why I really like silent movies, and I really like old black and white movies, because I used to love, and I still love to watch Charlie Chaplin's movies. And I have to give it up for Spike Lee as well. Spike Lee was a major influence when I was a teenager. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. When
Why
Do the
that?
Right Thing came out. Oh, my God. I guess because when I grew up, like I say, no, it had changed in France, but back then, like, maybe we were like the only black family in my small city, and then it changed, and then we moved neighborhoods, and we were like in a little suburb or ghetto, French ghetto, as they call it. That's true. And we had like a somebody got a tape from a cousin of a cousin who's been to the States and brought this old VHS back, and so we were all watching it. Like, yeah, that was VHS of Do the Right Thing in the 1990 something. And I was like, oh my God, yeah, that was really a revelation for me, because I used to watch all these films with only, where on, all the main characters were always white. And in my writing and in my screenwriting, like, my characters were always white. Like, for me, it was like, I don't know how I was conceiving this. But for me, it was not possible to have, like, all the main characters being black. And when I watched Do the Right Thing, and I was, like, I don't know, maybe 10 or 11 or 12 back in the days, and I was like, oh, my God, it's possible. You can just, like, put some black people on the screen and tell stories. So I guess it really changed my... my point of view, or the way I was writing, because I just love that film. It still gives me the thrill every time I see him, because I remember that first day when I was like, oh my God, black people can be the main characters. I would have never guessed that. But it's real when you grow up in an environment where you don't see yourself on the screen, you don't feel yourself being represented, and all of a sudden you see something different. Yeah, for me it was like a major cultural shock, likely.
My question for you. You have the passion. We can definitely hear about Spike. We can definitely hear that. We can hear the love for Chaplin. We hear the love for New Wave. And the one thing you had said is you remember stories being told in the house, being, you know, growing up, the Tontons, Pantene's, they all came by. Now, have you figured out, or are you still working on a way, or have you already combined the deep love you have for the culture, stories in the house, with your love for film that you studied growing up?
I feel it's still a work in progress. I really want to do that. I don't think I've done that yet in my films, even though I have many projects about it. I feel like more in my poetry, maybe. I have a poem that's a little telling my stories called Vina Moela, and I have another one about my grandma called Grandma, where I started doing that, like mixing stories that I heard when I was a child, and mixing English and French and Chiluba, which is the language of my parents. Sometimes I'm Swahili and Lingala. I really like that, like using these stories or this heritage and putting that in my poetry, and I hope that I'll be able to do that in film soon. I remember that at some point I was fascinated because I was looking in a book or on the internet, I don't remember, and I read all those stories about the tattoos on the bellies that some tribes in Africa do. Well, scarification. You can call it scarification or tattoos. And then I become really obsessed about it. And I ask my parents, oh, but what's that? Like, do we have this? And they're like, oh, yeah, all your grandmas and great-grandmas and stuff. It's just that it's something that people don't do anymore, because after the colonization, it was seen as something really really bad and I don't know, associated with, bad things. Anyway, so then I started developing this obsession, and I was doing a project about Congo last year for the 50th year of independence, and I came up with these pictures where I had like fake tattoos on my bellies, and we took a lot of pictures with one of my friend here in Toronto with a photograph, and then everybody was telling me, oh my God, where did you get that concept, and what does it mean, and the things on your belly and stuff. And I was like, well, it's just, I didn't create anything or invent anything. I just took some stuff that I've done some research about, and then I asked my parents, and that's how I came up with this thing about my, in my poem about my grandma, and it's like, oh, my grandma has no wrinkles on her magic skin, tattoos on her belly, she's a Luba queen. And so that's why in all my poetry, I always have something about the tattoos on the belly. Yeah, that's my obsession from the moment.
I want to hear that poem. Go ahead.
Sorry, that poem?
Continue on, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, sure. Tattoos on her belly, she's a Luba queen. She holds me in her arms late at night when I'm afraid, lets me sit on her lap when I need a place to rest my head. She tells stories from the past, from when she was my age, from when children were dancing and gathering in our village. She uses words like Zulu, Kwanisha, Mwabilai to remind me that we're from the province of Kasai. She teaches me ancient songs, ancient games, ancient names. Her eyes are wise and strong, and she has healing hands. mother, healer, storyteller. When I grow old, I want to be just like her. She's like a library, open like just for me, never tired of teaching new words to me. Then when the evening comes and it's time to go to sleep, she waits patiently for me to go hide under my sheets and to close my eyes, and then she starts singing. Shakena wo, shakena ni, dimuku suwa, dimuku nanga. Shakena wo, shakena ni, dimuku nanga, bikola mwanani. Then she blows me a kiss and goes back to her sleep with a smile on her face while she rests in peace.
That's it.
Woo!
Yeah.
So that's how I come with all
to
this content. Back to Mbujimaya. That's where my family is from. Mbujimaya used to be Bakwanga,
wow.
and my parents have all these super stories about Mbujimaya and how they had this game when they were children. That's called the Chidemba. Well, I guess it's called the Chidemba in Mbujimaya, but I'm sure like all the children of the world have played this game where it's the end of the day and you all gather together and you tell stories and the grandmother come and tell stories and that's how we learn, right? They have all these proverbs and that's how we get our education through these proverbs and this storytelling. Part of it is game, but behind the game there's always a double meaning. So yeah, that's where I got all these stories.
Like we can, and the one thing about you when you were saying the poem and how you switched up there, the one thing a true artist, the passion just comes through, and you went deep on that one. You went back to Kasai on that poem. I was looking around, thought I was back in Kananga, and I was like, oh my God. What's your grandmom's name? What was her name?
My grandma's name is Kanku, Mamu Kanku, and that's my name too. My first name is Kanku, so that's what the poem is about when she sings the Shakena. Shakena is like a concept, not a concept, but in Chuluba, when you're someone Shakena, it means homonym, so that means you've been named after someone, and I've been named after my grandma. From the paternal side, and her name is Mamu Kanku. So that's what the song is about when she sings, Shakena, oh, Shakena, that means my homonym, my little homonym, my little child, I really love you, I really love you. And that's what the song is about.
And your granddad's name?
Oh, my God, you want me to go back? My granddad's name.
I don't want to get a text message from Kasai and say, what about the grandfather?
No, that's true, and that's what I did in my poem, Bina Muela, because we have, like, it's a poem, like, dedicated to my family, so at the end of it, I'm singing the ancestors, like we say, in the village, so giving the name of all of my ancestors, and I say, well, they have to rest in peace, because especially my dad was really, when he grew up, he was always listening to all these stories, because my great-great-granddad was like a chief in Mbujimaya, like the traditional chief when it was still called Bakwanga. So there's all this storytelling about my family, like even when you listen to the African song, the song from Chalamwana or the Bayuda of the Congo and all of that, they always have like a verse about Mwela Yombo, who is my great-great-great-great-great-great granddad. I'm not sure. So they're always singing, something like that. So I remember every time those songs came out, or when at home we were listening to songs back from Chalamwana, and my parents were always like, listen, she sings about your great-great-granddad, and his name was Mwela Yombwe, and he was the chief from Bakwanga, that's why she's singing him. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay. And, you know, when you're a child, you just don't pay attention, you don't care. I didn't care. I was like, yeah, sure, well, it's a thing from back home, and I'm a French girl, and this and that. But then when you become an adult, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's true, that's interesting, and I start doing all this research, and I'm like, well, it's important to know your roots, then so that you can decide where you're going. So, why there's this whole tradition of singing and of paying tribute to the ancestors in my family. Yeah, I can like find Dinamora. I have these verse where I'm like, oh, I don't know how long I'm going to stay in this game, but if you know me, you know I have to finish with a bang. Then when everything is done and it's time to write the end, gather my girls, my sons, my family, my friends, and bring my ashes back to my heart on Bakwanga. But those who have loved me for a while, call me Binamwela. Let me to rest next to my auntie Mwika, next to my uncle Kase, my great-grandma Daya, Mamukanku, Tia, Ntumba, Bamanya, Kalala, Mushia, Kasanj, Kwamba, next to my great-granddad Mudingai, Kashama, and my great-great-granddad Yombo Wamwela. Let me to rest next to all my Bankwamba, because they loved me for a while. So there's this whole tradition about singing your ancestors and your family and paying tribute to those who were there before you and the way they're going to be there after you. So, yeah, that's really something that my parents insisted on when I was growing up.
What's your parents' name?
Oh my God, we have so many names. Like, you can ask that in African.
You know they're listening right now.
They're listening. So I have to tell my name. Like, shout out to my beautiful dad. His name is Florian Mwela Chibadi Nkashama. He has too many names. Let's sing Kashama Mwela. My mom, Chantal Mwela, our name, Congolese name is Mulongi Mfamba. Shout out to my grandma, Keima Onokanga, listening from Kinshasa, DRC.
That's right. Throw it up.
Yeah, right on the street. Shout out to my grandma, Keima. So, yeah, we have a huge family. And all these stories, like you were talking, so Dad, I love you. So you were asking me about putting these stories into films. And that's true that one day I was speaking to my mom on the phone and she was talking about the 70s, that's really a part of the history of Congo that I'm really interested in, the 70s in Kinshasa. It was just crazy. Like the fashion, mm-hmm. the people, everything that was going on. And my mom was there in the 70s when Muhammad Ali came for that rumble in the jungle thing. Mm-hmm. And she was a teenager back then. And she was telling me all these stories about how everybody was super excited and people wanted to go. And my uncles got some tickets and some of my aunties wanted to go, but they couldn't because they were not allowed to because they were not 18. So I was like, oh, that would be such a great movie. Such a great, at least short film about this coming. I was thinking about this, a coming of age story. With everything that my mom was talking to me about, the excitement of knowing that, oh, Muhammad Ali is in town and who's going to go and who has a ticket and can we just escape the parents and try to run away and go just for the just to see Muhammad Ali. And he stayed for a couple of months in Kinshasa. So he had all these stories, and my uncle have all these stories too. So I'm sure it will be like a great movie and something different about Africa, because when you see movies about Congo or about Africa, you always see like the wars and people being poor and in need and this and that, but it's just one side of the story. But that's not what I grew up with. That's not what my parents taught me, and all the stories that they have like need to be told. And something like this, like when you see documentaries about Rumble in the Jungle and all of that, you only see the side from like the American side or the side from Muhammad Ali's team or all of that. But what about the people who were there in Kinshasa? What about their excitement, their stories, their wanting to be there? Like, that's something that, well, at least I've never seen it. If it exists, I don't know. I've never seen it, but that's something that needs to be done. And it's a universal story. Like, I think everybody can relate. Everybody has been a teenager and wanting to go see, I don't know, Michael Jackson or Lady Gaga or something. So it's the same kind of thing, being a teenager and you want to go and your parents are like, no, you're too young. And you want to have like the latest fashion and stuff. So yeah, that's really something that is of interest to me, like Kinshasa in the 70s, Yeah, just when I watch the videos of the Zyko Longa Longa and the old dances and stuff, it's just beautiful. The story to be told there.
Well, you write that story, I'll produce it.
Okay, that's number one on the list.
All right. Like one, then we have like 1A and 1B. Let's do it like this. Once you dedicate this, we have to do our first commercial break here. You know, I pushed a couple to the side because today's show is about you. So we have to do a quick commercial break here. Why don't you dedicate this song we're about to play? We'll give a shout out to the parents back in the old country, back in France. We'll give a shout out to the family. So we'll dedicate this to your parents, all right? So why don't you give them a shout out in French or whatever language you want, and then I'll play it for you.
Okay, in French, cette chanson est dédicacée à mes parents. Papa Florian, Maman Chantal, je sais que vous m'écoutez en ce moment, donc c'est pour ça que je parle français. This song is for you.
Oh, my goodness. You might have to come down here and work the control. Here we go. Shabango Kadima from Rum Africa. Sabrina, hope that was all right for you.
Oh, my God. That was all right. I was dancing in my living room. We should have started like this. Now I'm all awake, and I did my little mutras in my living room. Yeah, it was perfect.
Throw the dollar on the forehead. Put the money on the forehead.
Exactly.
You gotta have some fun. You gotta have some fun. You know, we do what we can down here. We do what we can. So that's for your, for the people you gave a shout out to back east. We have something for your brothers and sisters. We'll get to them in a second. So now you know we have to discuss what brought you to our attention here at the studio, which was that awesome poem, "I Am Not Ruined." Can you tell us about it?
Yes. Yes, actually, it's We Are Not Ruined. We are not ruined.
We are not ruined. I'm sorry. We are not ruined. I stand corrected.
Exactly. I wrote this poem, so how can I bring it without being rude? you know, well, we all know that there's a play that has been highly successful, this play by Lynn Nottage called Ruined, about the situation in Congo. I really love and respect Lynn Nottage. Don't get me wrong. Intimate Apparel and everything that she did before. Like I've been to see those plays and I really like them. And then when Wound came out, a lot of my friends, a lot of people were telling me, oh, there's this play about Congo. You have to go and see it. Blah blah blah. And I was hearing all the buzz about it, and I was like, I'm not sure, but I need to see for myself before making any critics or saying anything. So, because usually when it's sad to say, but a lot of time when there's things about Africa or about Congo, but that are being written or directed or made by Westerners, it's always kind of a different point of view. It's always a little disappointing for me, for myself at least, to see how the same stereotypes always prevail. So I went to see the play. I really didn't like it. Like, no offense to Lynn Nottage, but I didn't even recognize the Congo. Like, I know she did her best, she tried her best, but like the music, the people, even the names, the languages and everything. Like, it's not the way we Africans tell stories. Like, I really appreciate the fact that she wanted to talk about the situation in Eastern Congo, like the rape of the woman. But the way she did it for me was not good at all, and I didn't see, like, it was such a depressing play, and as African, we're not depressed, we're not depressing people, especially Congolese. Like, I really didn't recognize myself, and I. Like, yes, I know that there's war in Congo and there's women being raped, and it's important to highlight that. But it was depressing. It was not like I felt like it was not in depth about what we Congolese women are and how we survive, because we are survivors. We are not women. We are survivors. Mm-hmm. That's what we are, and that was totally lacking, you know. In her play, the way she told the stories, like if you talk to my mom, my aunties, my grandmas, like they've been in camps, like they've seen wars, they've seen colonizations, and the way they tell their stories has nothing to do with what I saw in Wound. That's why we say we are survivors. And even from my own experience, like I was not raped in Eastern Congo and all of that, but like I'm an abuse survivor, like a sexual abuse survivor. And I'm kind of open about it. It's like if you read all my poems, like I talk about it sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I know that the psychological part is what is even, that's what is hard to recover from. Like, so if you, like if I, as an abuse survivor, if I'm telling myself every day, oh, I'm ruined, what can I do, I'm ruined, blah, blah, blah. Like I can just kill myself right now, right? Because there's all this shame and guilt and a lot of things that is associated with rape or having been raped. And so for me, it was really sad to see that a woman that I admire and I like her other work, the way she decided to talk about sexual abuse and everything that is really associated with it, was so negative, and where is the resilience, and where is the hope, and where is, you know, it's really, these women are, have been raped, so they're ruined, and that's the end of the world, and that's it. That's what I took from that play, and that's what I was totally disagreeing with. And I was like, no, it's not what it is about. Oh, I'm sorry.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah, sorry. It's my mom calling me. My mom is like, what are you talking about on the radio?
I was thinking that too. I was like, I can hear him already.
Yeah. Or maybe it's my mom. I remember someone was asking me, my mom does not live in Canada. She lives in France, but sometimes she comes in and visits me in Congo. And I had a friend who's like, if your parents come, are you going to take your parents to see the play, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, hell no. Especially now that I've seen it. Like, even my parents would be like, what is that? Was it ever Congo? That's not the Congo we grew up in. Like, no. Like, where was that? Like, the people and then the stories. I'm like, no, so I was really pissed after that play. I was like, no, that's not what Africa is about. It was like a lot of cliche and stereotypes about those soldiers raping women. Like, you have the feeling that those rapes are happening for no reason, like, just because people want to be, like mean to one another. Like, there was no, well, it was lacking of the political, historical, socio-economical context and all of that. I know that the situation in Congo is very complex, so that's why it's hard to talk about it, because you have to look at all the historical aspects and everything that is going on. Like, it's not even a war only happening in Congo. Like, I don't know how many African countries are involved, maybe 7 or 8, plus United Nations, plus North America. There's just too many things involved, so I can understand that she wanted to just simplify things and just talking about these women and giving them a voice. But the voice that she gave them is not African. Like, if you look at the dialogue, and even when those women have monologue, like, that's not the way we talk. That's not the way we talk at all. It's a very Americanized or Westernized concept way of talking that. It's not the way a Congolese woman or even a woman from the diaspora like me will talk or will tell the story. So that's how I decided to write this poem. And at first I was like, well, I'm not going to say anything. I'm not, you know, I know that sometimes I can have a big mouth. So I'm like, I'm going to keep my big mouth shut, because everybody was like, oh, it's a 4-star play and got the Pulitzer and Oprah Winfrey wants to make a movie about it and play Mama Nadi or whatever the name of this main character is and things like that. I'm like, you know what, I'm just going to, you know, stay quiet. And one of my girlfriends who took me to that play, and she really liked it, and when we had this great conversation, where she was like, well, I don't understand why you don't like it. And I tried to make my point, and she said, well, you can write something. And I said, well, why would I write? Like, it's Lynn noted, like, who am I? And they're like, yeah, you can write something. You're Sabrina Morella. And if you disagree, you know, tell your point of view and get it off your chest. So that's how it started. And that's how I started this poem, We Are Not Ruined. And I performed it at an event in Toronto. And I got some good feedback from people. So I was surprised. I'm like, okay. and then I posted it online, and I had all these people reaching out to me and saying, oh, that's wonderful, and you're not alone, and we are thinking that too, and blah, blah. And that's what that's really what this poem is about. I try to explain why we are not ruined, and why we are resilient people, and why we are survivors of dictatorship, of imperialism, of colonialism, of genocide, and how we manage to make a living, and how we still are positive people, and we still like to share stories, and we still are the ones who want to make our government accountable for what is happening right now in the Congo, and not only our governments, but the governments of United States, of America, of Canada, of all these countries who are using, abusing, and exploiting basically the Congo, who have been exploiting the Congo for the past 200 years. Because a lot of people are profiting from this war. Like, they don't want it to end because that's money. It's a lot of money. So, so yeah, that's, and the problem is that the main reason why these women are abused and raped every day is because they're trying to kill the people's spirit, basically. Like once a woman has been raped, and if the resilience or the hope is not there, then like you destroy a woman, you destroy the family, you destroy the family, you destroy the city, you destroy the nation, and then you can just keep on exploiting the mines and everything that's going on. And so that's why in my poem I was like, you know, they can destroy our bodies, but they won't destroy our spirits, because the spirit is still there and we are not ruined. So that was the poem was all about.
Okay.
Basically.
Can we hear some of that now? Can we hear some of that now?
Can yes,
you blow
sure.
To the audience out there?
Oh yeah, I can right now. Again, you're gonna I can explain some of the references after that. But I can give some of them some of it now. So it's called We Are Not Ruined.
It's about you, go ahead.
We are not ruined. We are the ones who wear cornrows on our heads and draw tattoos on our arms to show the world our precious uniqueness. We are not ruined. We are the ones who tie wrappers around our hips to go out, two for the married women, one for the single ones. We are not ruined. We are the ones who eat white clay when we're expecting, to give strength to our baby while they're growing inside our wombs. We are the ones who gather together in the evening to share stories and laughter and to ask one another, citoyenne, toko se kanabiso nini, We are not ruined. We are the ones who wake up every morning to go sell dumplings and cassava at the market to provide for our families. We are the ones who manage to make a living despite the power cuts, the unpaid salaries, and the unmaintained roads. We are the ones who are tired of our corrupted governments who steal the country's money while our own children are starving. We are not ruined. We are the survivors of colonialism, imperialism, dictatorship, and genocide. We are the ones who know that when foreigners come and take our diamonds, our copper, our cobalt, our coltan, and give us a right back in exchange, this is not fair trade. We are not ruined. We are the one who reclaim justice for the 5 million dead in the Democratic Republic of Congo since 1998. We are the women whose mothers and daughters and granddaughters are abused and raped every day by soldiers who use guns and machetes to make sure that our bodies will never give birth again. But we are not ruined. We are the ones still standing on our feet, shaking, in tears, but still standing. Because they might destroy our bodies, but they won't destroy our spirits. And though they want us to keep crying, we are the ones who keep on praying and singing. Like, we are not ruined. We are the women of Bukavu, Goma, Uvira, Beni, walking together in our streets to reclaim our dignity. And as long as we'll be breathing, we'll have the strength to keep on telling. To the soldiers who think that they can kill us, we are not ruined. To the Westerners who think that they can manipulate us, we are not ruined. To the governments who think that they can despise us, we are not ruined. We are not ruined. We are not ruined. And this is it.
Man. Ooh. Oh. Speak on, sister. Speak, as they say in the church. And the church says, amen. Wow.
Amen.
Wow.
Hallelujah. So yeah, this is it. And again, yeah, I guess I put all of my heart in it and all of the hurt that I was feeling after this play, where I was like, this is not what Congolese women are about. We are survivor, we are resilient. And for me, like, having to listen to all that play and at the end, like, the main character saying, I'm ruined, I'm like, no. As a rape survivor, like, I couldn't take it. As a woman, I couldn't take it. As a Congolese woman, I couldn't take it. I'm like, no. Like, we are survivors. And I put the tattoos on it, because I really like those scarification on our belly. That's really, for me, something that that's a symbol of womanhood. And all these little details about tying wrappers around the hips and things like that, that for me were lacking from the play. And for me, like, I was asking questions to my mom, and sometimes she's like, oh yeah, like, if you're married, you put two, if you're single, you put one. the white clay. I remember being a teenager, and we used to love eating white clay with my cousins. So we were not allowed to do it, but because all of our aunts were eating the clay, and we just took that habit. And it just when I was an adult, I asked my mom, but why do you eat clay when you're pregnant? And she's like, well, it's a tradition. I'm like, no, there must be something. And she's like, yeah, because give strength to the babies. And I was reading something about, I guess, in the South, maybe South Carolina, or I don't think, in the South of the United States, and some black women do the same thing, you know, the eating the clay or eating things that seem kind of real for pregnant women. So I did some research, and I guess it's just something that that was left from the Middle Passage, that women still know that, okay, we're expecting, so they try to eat like clay and things like that. It's really a traditional thing, and that's another aspect that I'm really interested in studying or researching when I do my themes or my poetry. I like to look at the diaspora, the African diaspora, and look at what is still there. And the eating of the clay is something that, is still there, and it's fascinating. So, little like this. I have the hint to Zap Mama, who is one of my favorite artists. Like when I say, Tokoseka na biso nini, that was in one of her first albums. But she has this little quote, Zap Mama and the other women that were in the band back then, doing this introduction with her. And she's an artist that I really like. Like whatever she's doing with her music, like mixing her Congolese origin with her Belgium origin and with her European background, and putting all of that in her music, and then being respected all over the world for doing that. And I feel like if I can do the same thing in film that my idol Zap Mama is doing with her music, I will be the happiest woman in the world. Mm-hmm. So that's it. That's what this time was about. I tried to talk about like the economic situation, about all these resources that are stolen every day from different foreigners or from the government who just want to, you know, steal the country's money. But everybody knows. Oh, everybody keeps saying, oh my God, the Congo is so rich. The Congo is so rich, but the inhabitants are so poor. And what's going on? And all of that. And so, you have to put things in context, and that's what I'm trying to do. And I know that when I was growing up, like my dad was always giving us those history lessons, those teacher's lessons that me and my brother didn't like when we were young. But now that we're adults, we realize how important it is to know our own stories, because the way when I went to school, the way we are talking about Africa is really not a good thing. It's not I was glad that I had my parents to counterbalance with their own stories, so that I can know that we're not only a poor country with like no civilization or something. You know, we go way back. We go way back and have a lot of tradition that unfortunately we are being lost right now. Like for me, it's sad that if I want to know my own story or culture, I have to go to a museum to see my own sculptures. Like if I want to see Lobat sculptures or things that like used to belong to my family, you know, I have to go to a museum. Or if I want to buy them, I have to pay, I don't know, $10,000 or something for statues. So it's kind of depressing, but you know, it's all good. It's still there.
It's all good,
And as long as we keep this attitude of being resilient and knowing where we stand, and if we might be shaky or we might be bruised, but you know, we're still standing, and that's important. Like if I have children tomorrow, I don't want to teach them about being ruined. Like where is it going to lead them if I teach them every day, you know, you're poor, you're ruined, and you're this and you're that? No, that's not what my real story is. So that's what the poem was all about. And I think I'm not the only one thinking it, because I had
yeah, so many feedback after I did the performance or after I post that on the website. And so, yeah, it's great. It's great. So if Oprah wants to talk to me about Congo, you can give her my number.
Yeah, when I see Oprah tomorrow, I say, call this person. She has some things to talk about. So just give me a shout out. That's all I ask for. I'll see what I can do. We do what we can down here. So look.
Yeah.
Let's do it like this. You talked about the culture. We have about a few minutes left here. In fact, we're going to go a little beyond our little time here, and we definitely have to do a part two. So let's give we have to do our next musical break here. So let's how about we give a little shout out to all the people from our generation? Is that cool?
Oh, yeah, that's cool. Yeah, shout out to my brother, right, sisters, so, cousins, Muela family,
right.
Switzerland,
right.
Europe, South Africa, North Carolina, and so on and so forth.
All right. Do you want? Let me ask this question. Do you want it in Lingala or do you want it mixed up? How you want this next song?
Yeah, Lingala would be great. Yeah.
Okay. Let's see what we can dig up here for our generation here. See what we can do. You know, I have to end down this way. Oh yeah, here we go. This is the Young Day. I just gave the introduction. Let's let it ride.
Central, kini zana we? Mwaya otika rapete na otika mwaya oko mamwa netike. Rana fia, sa sa fia de lettre. Devoir nangeza, Lingala faut connaître. Bana mai ba mi kiba wosa Lingala. Ba mi suku na kana kimba wosa Lingala. Inanga moso kama to yoyo kanga. Mumino na cosmos a zwa komina baringa. Soko e bien portant sa langue meta rotunanga. Mwana kitambu kamba bilone ako chao na tan. De fois te h o double l a n d. Bisson to pique plan yo. Mamba pika pende. Soko confirme na kinte negro sate. A to beti fete na mikile negro sate.
Tozako, tozayo, biloko. Ozana, ngoposa. Ya forman, kama tango na liga.
Onza muna. Cheke uwa mukusa.
Partout, partout.
Mon collecte bah ici, n'allons pas faire Pikachu. What the fuck you gonna do? Soko Monica, I double L, anakasa bala bala no. Koinate, changa love na sipi. Nana mwana wana nzamba tinda kia kusala. Kula rap linga la fona ba nige bando nalisa. Enso kamuso, tunakolo alobano biloko za kusala zama be. Poto kome na suka mutmo faya koloba verite. Ota omeka, ifone ekraze. Ako tika la na selo kola chicle. Mwaya longa facilement negre zate. Ifo bazwa tempo na balongo la ye. Nana za idolo na kat idéologie. Naza moteur na kat ya lokomotif. Soko mekinga nego za metif. Oza na beza rap na nalo kola mwaya kin.
Tozako, pesa yo, biloko. Oza na ngoposa. Ya forma, kama tango na ninga.
Verset 3 na pousom linga la forme. Oza na foa, foa loko la monsion. Yonga longwa kin pona ya mikini. Ako bosse fort pour la zonga Congo. Ako s'exprimer na langue et sala. Ke Congo bobimba, toza la famille mosi. Ota omeka kusto peye. Nan koze ban kozi na kotala ye. Soko ebinga konga tena tala yo. Nam na ye bie na sala ba staff na yo. Mon fils Young David, oza wat.
Yes,
Kumba kuroza rapo sove kumbu.
Ankolo, ngana lali sakate. Deja ba iba, ngana lala hana miswe moko. Natala banemi na ngana lisa gauche. Lisa droite na tika reza la moa semblant. Mwenje na mouva, na kangilio. Yeme, bima kamuna kosala yo. Banga krana rap nege. Sistema pim 4 MC sounds like a bitch on me.
Tozako.
Yeah, good pick.
We do what we can down there. We do what we can.
Yeah.
Look.
Yeah. Maybe time flies when you're in good company. Oh my God.
You're the good company, my friend. We got to do a part two. We have to do a part two.
We have to do a part two. I have to talk to you more about my next film projects, all my poetry and stuff. I guess if people want to find out more about me, they can go on my website, which is sabrinamoela.com, and I have many blogs and links and stuff out there. Yeah, I have like my poetry part one was called Walk in My Shoes, some poetry about myself growing up, my family and stuff. And part two is coming up soon in September. I have a new poetry project called 33, because I'm going to turn 33 soon. So I have some poems about that, and people can find out about my short films, Nappy Heads, and I Love You, and Missing, and a lot of other stuff coming up. So, yeah, we have to do part two.
Oh, we definitely will. There's no question. I might do it for like 90 minutes. this Sabrina, could you give that website again? Can you give your website again, please?
Yeah, sure. It's sabrinamoela.com. So S-A-B-R-I-N-A, M as in mother, O-E-L-L-A. .com, and over there you can find out more about my writings, and you can watch some of my short films and find out more about what I'm up to. I have a new short film coming up that's called Doing Just Fine, another one that I'm working on that's called That Day We Broke Up, and I'm working on a musical as well. I love music, I love dancing, and that's my big project for next year. So if we do part two, I'll talk more about my other project. I got carried away with my poems,
yeah.
And you brought me back to Bakwanga, aka Mbujimai, and stuff, and yeah. So that's how we do it.
That's how we get down.
Yeah, that's how we get down. And if you come to my home when my parents and mother are there, like sometimes we have guests, they come in the morning and they don't leave until the next day because we have too many stories to tell, and you're having a good time, and they give you the foo-foo and the beers and stuff, and it's just there, stories after stories and having fun.
As long as there's pondu there, I'll be happy. And some beignet, I'll be all right.
There's a pondu. So, yeah, come to my place, there's a pondu, there's everything, and that's what we do. We share stories and we survive, and that's it. Mm-hmm. So I'm really
going to survive. We're going to do news, so I want to say thank you for coming on. You got a lot going on up there. I really appreciate it. You've touched a lot of people. You've moved a lot of people. You've educated a lot of people, and that's just a sign of how you were raised. That's a sign of your family. So much love to your family. So before you go, if you can give us one last introduction. We have to go off the air here, so we'll play a little music. So if you can give a shout-out to all the Congolese and diaspora, we're going to mix it up here. Give a little love to all of them.
Yeah, shout out to all my fellow Congolese people all over the world, because we're big travelers. So big up to Congolese in the Tida, Toronto, in Paris, in Kinshasa, of course. Like you know, say biso na biso, Congolese people, that's for you.
Well, here we go. Sabrina, talk to you later. We are gone.
Okay, bye.
Let's ride, people.
Na lisanga na bukasi na buyukani, ndeto kolunga ngoe. Peuple congolais, tilima, 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 tilima. Let
maji sacho basa sote ni pamoja mkono songe mbele
pepe kongole zonga nandela venga na mungu na tunasuka kukulete komona batu alibanda bayako sansa viso otango ekoki ya koteka molimo peko somba bamba nyoso bamba soko wabona mboka liwayasina fumuti mangu loma kabila emeglumumba doze longo 2014 2019 ebene mamoza situbi ayembi wo
ooh, atatake vita nani ya kongo
Nadisa, people, Saga Cat the Benga, live and direct from Los Angeles. We are riding with Sabrina Moella, live and direct from T-Dot. That's Toronto for y'all. If y'all don't know, now you know. Hope you enjoyed the ride. We're going to do a part two. We're going to get down as we always get down. Hope you had fun. I see all your texts, all your messages here, but you know, I wanted to get the poem in. I wanted to get her words in, and I can see already she touched a lot of you guys out there. And people, you can always tell when someone has passion for what they're doing because you can hear the passion in their work. You can see the passion in their work. We're definitely going to do a part two. Y'all have a great day today, wherever you are. Have a great night, wherever you are. Do what you do. Live your dreams. Make them real. Tomorrow's not guaranteed, so make it happen today. Sorry to catch the Dabinga. Live and direct from Los Angeles, I'm gone.